Hey, everybody, before we get started today with Drupal Easy Podcast number 149, I thought we'd take a moment and remember Aaron Winborn, a longtime Drupal community member and contributor who passed away recently after a long battle with Lou Gehrig's disease. Is that correct? I believe that's right.
Yeah.
ALS.
So I just wanted to mention that and pay tribute to Aaron. Anybody who uses the Medium module is basically using work that Aaron originally created. A couple of really good links I'm going to put in the show notes. One that is, I'll give you a fair warning, it's a little bit emotional. It's a farewell letter from his father to Aaron, which was posted on Aaron's blog. And then something that the Drupal Association announced, that they created the Aaron Winborn Award to honor amazing community members. So two very nice ways to remember Aaron. So I think what we'll do is we'll take a quick pause and then start the podcast. Alrighty, so welcome to Drupal Easy Podcast number 149. My name, as always, is Mike Anello. Not quite flying solo today. We managed to wake Ted Bowman out of sound sleep, apparently. Ted, how's it going?
It's good. Yeah. I'm actually already had an hour walk and coffee this morning.
I was going to say, did you have coffee? You're not your usual chipper self.
I'll get there by, you know, give me 10 minutes through the podcast.
All right. Well, I have a feeling you're going to have to go faster than that because we've got two high energy guests today. Eric Baldwin, longtime friend of mine, and I know yours as well, Ted, and a lot of people here in Florida. Even though he's no longer a Florida resident, we still try and claim him as one of our own. Eric, how are you today?
Doing excellent. How are you?
Right now, a native of Portland, Oregon, and
you can't now be a native.
No, now a resident. Thank you.
Resident, yeah, resident weirdo. I guess.
Well, look who woke up to correct me so quickly. Eric, you are now an Acquia employee. You are a front-end developer, correct?
Correct. I am a network software engineer with a front-end focus.
All right. So you work on front-end tasks for the Acquia network. Is that about right?
Yeah. Since I started in September, my main function actually has been working on a unified front-end experience for all the products.
All right, very good. And our other guest today is, again, another longtime friend of myself and the Florida Drupal community, especially Mike Herschel.
Hey, how's it going?
All right, now a member of Team Lullabot, a front-end developer, and you weren't on the last Drupalize Me podcast, but I recently heard you not too long ago on there.
Yeah, I've been on a couple. Gosh, I forget what we talked about, but this is much better.
So you're a front-end developer with Lullabot. Anything cool that you've been working on that you can tell us?
Yeah, we launched sci-fi.com in January, and I recently came off the project. You know, we launched it and then added on some features afterwards, and that was just an amazing experience, and the site looks really kick-ass. It was a lot of fun.
So do you know what the next big project is?
I have an idea, but it's not set in stone yet, so we'll see.
So, Mike, because you're not saying this is going to be confusing. Ulta Mike, because you're not saying where he's a resident of, I'm assuming you're saying it's not as cool as Portland.
Maybe as cool, but not as weird.
You're just in my hometown.
Yeah, that's true. Mike, currently a resident of Gainesville, Florida.
Yeah, Gainesville is pretty amazing. We're about 2 hours north of Orlando, but it's kind of a world of difference. It's a lot better, in my opinion.
A lot of gators up there.
Absolutely.
A lot of Florida gators. All right, so we invited Eric and Mike on the podcast today because you guys are half of our Florida Drupal Camp 2015 featured speakers. Eric, you're going to be talking about theming in Drupal 8. Mike, you're going to be talking about front-end development, I think specifically with stuff you did on the sci-fi project, correct?
Yeah, I'm going to try to take some real-world examples and kind of show how they're applied.
All right. And Eric, what's your plan for your session?
To talk about stuff.
Okay. Glad we have you on the podcast. Great.
No, basically, I'll be going through a new overview of all the things that are new in Drupal 8 that themers need to worry about. What is Twig, things of that nature, new additions to the theme layer, the things that we're kicking out the door and saying goodbye to forever. And then we'll get into some demos about how to build a Twig-based theme for Drupal 8 and, you know, create some new things with Twig as well.
So tell us, what are the, you know, a little bit deeper than just Twig, but what are some of the things in the new theme layer that you're most looking forward to in D8?
Well, the fact that we don't have theme functions anymore and everything is passed through a render array to be processed through a template file. That's pretty awesome.
Right.
The process layer is gone.
Right. Everything is a template file now.
Yes, everything is a template, which makes it super easy to like start theming Drupal now without knowing Drupal. Mm-hmm.
And none of those templates have PHP, which I think is the main reason why it's super easy, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a little bit of Twig syntax, but if you like curly braces, you'll be good to go, I think.
Yeah, anyone who's written mustache templates or used Swig, which is a JavaScript templating engine based on Twig, it's really straightforward and easy.
So I think I'm sorry, let me get this one in here, then I'll shut up for a minute. I think you answered the second, my next question as well is, what are you looking forward to getting rid of?
The process layer.
Okay, that's what I thought.
So for Twig, like if everything's going through a template, that means module developers will also have to know Twig, right? Because if they want to make default templates?
Well, I mean, module developers are already in the habit of putting markup inside their PHP includes, right? So now we give them a proper place to put that markup.
Okay.
And Mike, you're going to be focusing less on D8 and more just on front-end techniques. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. So my presentation is still kind of a work in progress. It's going to focus on kind of how browser rendering works and how the browser works and how to apply that knowledge into real-world examples with like kind of browser runtime, which like as your web page is running, how to make that smooth, how to make the scrolling smooth, how to make everything else smooth within it. And I'm going to talk a lot about a lot of different tricks and techniques and tools. So there's going to be a lot to learn in there. It's not going to be so much Drupal specific, mm-hmm. although we are going to touch on some Drupal stuff. But it's a lot of really, really cool techniques and knowledge that I think a lot of people would be excited to learn.
So if someone has a pretty firm grasp on HTML and CSS and maybe a little bit of JavaScript, would they be comfortable, Mike?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right, very, very good.
I could just interject for a second.
Yeah, of course.
Crystal, if you're going to be talking about front-end process, are you also going to be talking about, you know, unit tests or automated testing for accessibility?
No, I have a one-hour session, so I'm kind of scrambling to get everything I can in there, so the answer to that is no.
Okay.
Yeah, so let me just hop in here. So out of the four featured sessions, Mike has a single-length session. Eric, you've got a double-length session. So, Eric, I believe there's going to be some like a hands-on your session, correct?
Yeah, that is my plan. The first hour will be mostly presentation, just getting people familiar with what's new. Mm-hmm. And then the second hour, I'm hoping to do lots of demonstrations, like how to create a new Twig filter and stuff like that.
Right. And then, so we talk about our other two featured speakers really quick?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah, all right. So one of them is Tess Flynn from Blink Reaction, who is going to be talking about, she has a double-length session as well, and it's going to be a session on Drupal 8 site building and development, I believe. Mike, I think you were just chatting with her on Skype about what the plan was. Is that about right?
Yeah, that's accurate.
Okay. And she's, of course, the driving force behind Flag for D8. And one of the main reasons we asked her to be a featured speaker is because if you follow along Drupal Planet, she had a series of just wonderful blog posts as well as a couple of camp presentations about porting Flag to D8 and learning about D8 as part of that process. So really informative. No offense to you guys, but I'm actually really looking forward to that.
It's okay. You can talk to us at any time.
You can go to hell, Mike.
Well, I mean, all four of them are really good, though.
Yeah. Tess is also given her flag presentation at DrupalCon Los Angeles, just so everybody knows.
So this is a warm-up for her, I guess.
Well, it's a different session. So this is kind of like a development and site building double session. Her flag session, which is going to be different, she's giving at DrupalCon Los Angeles. And it's she also gave that presentation down at DrupalCon Bogota.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think she's given that one a couple times before because I've seen slides from it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then our fourth featured speaker is going to be Adam Globus, who is the driving force behind the Drupal Module Upgrader project. And this is a project where if you have a Drupal 7 module, you throw it at the Drupal Module Upgrader and it gets you part of the way, most of the way, some of the way to Drupal 8 compatibility. And we had Adam on the last pod, or two podcasts ago, I should say. So if you're interested in learning more about that and what his talk might be, definitely tune into podcast 147. Yeah, so Florida Drupal Camp is coming up this weekend, as a matter of fact. So today we're recording this on Monday, April 6th. The camp is on Saturday and Sunday, April 11th and 12th. Eric, when are you making the trip?
I believe I land at 11:30 p.m. on Thursday.
Okay.
And then I leave the following Thursday, sometime in the afternoon.
All right, very good. So you'll be here. You'll be here on Thursday night. Fantastic. Let's talk about some of the other things going on at Florida Drupal Camp. Mike, you want to mention a couple things so the podcast isn't all me?
Sure.
Throw you under the bus there.
So I'm looking forward to the after party, of course. That's kind of where my mind is. That's going to be at the same place we've had it for a couple of years. Firkin and Kegler, I think, is what it's called. Sponsored by Pantheon, so thanks, Pantheon. We have a number of different tracks. We have, you know, front-end development, design, site building, development, project management, sessions off the Drupal Island, and I'm probably missing one or two.
A beginner track.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have a dedicated beginner track from OS Training, which has been hugely successful in past years. So we're super excited about that.
Yeah, there's a lot of really interesting sessions at this camp. Jesus from Blink, the guy behind Drupal Console.
He is not making it.
Did that just change?
Correct, yeah. Yeah. He emailed in and told us that he's not going to be able to make it.
Oh, no. That's
nice. I know.
That's a bummer.
Yep.
Wah, wah, wah. All right. Well,
I talked to Jesus at mid camp and he was still undecided about travel plans.
Okay.
Come on, Jesus. I think we should permanently ban him from the state.
Oh, we could.
Oh, come on.
Let's see. What else did we have? We have sessions, a bunch of sessions on Drupal 8, a bunch of really interesting case studies, and then a bunch of off the island sessions as well. So this is, I think in the past we've been very Drupal centric, like I suppose most camps. But as I watched the proposed sessions come in this year, I was kind of surprised by the number of sessions that weren't necessarily, 100% focused on Drupal. We've got sessions on here. I'm looking at the schedule right now, so let me just name a few of them. High performance or DIY high performance Drupal hosting, visual CSS regression testing, Slack and Bitbucket, a couple of security related talks. What else was there? There was a couple. Let's see. Well, then there's, obviously a bunch of very Drupal focused ones. Oh, there's a legal one about legal and business issues for web professionals.
You have a couple sessions in there on D8 migration, which is going to be pretty awesome.
Yep, I hope so. I hope so. So it's a really nice, well-rounded set of sessions here. I think, if you're a beginner, obviously we've got our focus beginner track. But if you've been around Drupal for a while, I think we've got a good number of sessions that I think a lot of people will enjoy. I think our biggest complaint this year is probably going to be the same complaint we've had in the past few years, is that we've got, 7 sessions going at a time, Mike?
Yeah, something like that, depending on the time slot.
So six or seven at a time. So it's going to be obviously impossible to see, you know, all the sessions you're going to want to see. There's going to be conflicts.
Yep. Decisions,
you know,
decisions.
Going back to off-the-island sessions, I think it's really refreshing, you know, to have a lot of non-Drupal specific stuff. You know, that's kind of the way the project's going, right? You know, invented elsewhere, maintained other places.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And to bring in and to have people speaking about those topics where they're comfortable and they can kind of, you know, connect the dots between Drupal and those external projects is always really super important. All right. So if you're in the area and you want to come on down for the camp, it's, again, this weekend, April 11th and 12th here in beautiful Orlando, Florida. Weather looks to be great. $25. We'll get you entrance and a t-shirt and food and more food, actually. Food all day. I do want to, you know, just mention some of our sponsors. You know, we've got the best sponsors around. Blink Reaction, Mike, your company, Drupalize.me, Lullabot, Big Couch, Eric, your company, of course, Acquia, Pantheon, Media.
And my other company.
What's that?
And my other company.
And your other company, that's true, and Cloud9. I mean, but those first six that I mentioned, you know, including Pantheon and MediaCurrent, those are all gold sponsors. Then, as you said, Eric, your other company, Cloud9, along with a bunch of other companies, are silver sponsors, and we have some a couple bronze and some in-kind sponsors as well. We've got some great giveaways. We'll be giving away some books as well as some copies of PHP Storm. Thanks to some book publishers, as well as the fine folks at JetBrains, a bunch of copies of Drupal Watchdog, some really cool swag that we're giving away. So it's really just a fun community-based camp. This is really a camp that is organized by the community and run by the community. I think the day will reflect that nicely, so... All right, should we move on to some stories, guys?
Let's move it.
Yes,
absolutely.
All right, so let me scroll down here a little bit. Actually, before I do that, now that I look at the rundown, let me hit some Drupal Easy news real quick. Brian Lewis from Modules Unraveled was kind enough to recently have me on his podcast to talk about the current job market in Drupal, where we both ranted for, I think, a good 45 minutes to an hour, and that podcast surprisingly got a lot of attention, and you know, I think Drupal.org, actually, the official Drupal Twitter account, which is something like 60 or 70,000 people that follow that account, retweeted it as well. So I think as we speak today, Brian is doing a follow-up podcast on the same topic with some other folks as well. So that was good to see. So that link will be in the show notes. DrupalCon Los Angeles is coming up. We'll talk about that in a few minutes, but I do want to mention that Ted and I will actually be doing migration training at DrupalCon Los Angeles on Monday, May 10th, I believe is the date. It's the Monday of DrupalCon week. It's one of the official DrupalCon trainings, and if you are interested in migrating content into Drupal, then this is definitely the session for you. The vast majority of the session is hands-on. We'll be focused squarely on the Migrate module. I'll provide everybody with some kind of real-life data that we're going to be working with for the day. And the goal is that by the end of the day, you'll be able to import content from two different types of sources into Drupal 7. And, of course, depending on time and interest, we might cover a little bit of the Drupal 8 Migrate and Core stuff as well. So you can, the link will be in the show notes, but if you go to the DrupalCon website, when you register, there's all of the training sessions are there, including ours. It's called Getting Your Stuff into Drupal, Basics of Content Migration. And finally, what the hell was with the last podcast?
You mean the awesome April Fool's podcast?
Holy cow.
That was like the best thing ever. I was listening to that and I was about falling out of my chair kind of laughing. And like the amount of work that you guys put into that.
All right. Well, first of all, I think it's safe to say I did zero work for it.
Well, that's probably why it was so good.
That's yeah. There were some comments on Twitter about why it was so good, and my absence was doing
it. And I will say I did next to nothing. I think Ryan gets all of the credit for that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Have you reached Nirvana yet, Ted?
How can you say Nirvana yet? I
think you gotta be really careful what you say on the mic in this podcast.
Arvana?
No,
Nirvana.
I must not have had my coffee.
You know, we had talked about doing that for several weeks, probably actually at least a month prior to it happening. And as it got closer and closer, Ryan, we were talking about how we were going to do it. And Ryan said, well, you know what I'll do? I think I'll record each part separately, then just put it together at the end. And I said, okay, well, just let me know what you need from me. And he never did, which apparently was the wise decision. I think my main input to it was we have to have Chris Weber reading from the commit log.
That was the best part for me.
We know who the creative genius behind the Drupal Easy podcast is now.
There we go. Absolutely. So, yeah, thanks to Ryan. If you guys haven't heard it yet, check it out. It's called 18 Minutes Later. It's 18 minutes long. It's a short listen. It's officially podcast 148. Some great music, I got to admit. It was. If you're like David Bowie, you're going to love this podcast. It was absolutely.
I'm just looking forward to, you know, the first intergalactic Drupal events.
Yeah, that was
like going to our nearest satellite is intergalactic.
All right, so I think that covers it for Drupal Easy news for this week. So let's move on to our stories. So this first one, I thought it'd be a good discussion. It was a blog post by a gentleman named Michael Prasun, Prasun. Hopefully, I pronounced your name.
Prasun.
And he wrote about, you know, when do you use content types versus some other type of entity? The title of the blog post is Knowing When to Use Content Types and When to Use Custom Entities. And it's something that I think the more that people learn about either ECK, Entity Construction Kit, or Field Collection, or even Ted, your module, Entity Form, I think more and more people are not defaulting to using content types for their content necessarily. So I guess I wanted to kind of do a quick around the horn. I know, you know, Mike and Eric, you guys are more on the front end side, but I know you guys have been doing Drupal for a while, so definitely voice your opinion here. But we'll start with Ted. You know, when you're developing a site, how do you make that decision about whether or not something's going to be a content type or something else?
I mean, so if it's content type, it really should be something that, I mean, I think one of the big ones is it's meant to be site content. Like, it's meant to be created on the site, and then it's the main, one of the main content, you know, portions of the site. Like, you're displaying it to your end users.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a big one. I would also say,
but as opposed to, I mean, it can be argued if you're putting it on the website, it's content of some type, right?
Well, sometimes, like, Entity Form, a lot of people ask me when to use it. I think it's a good use case if you're collecting data on the site, but you're not displaying it back on the site. You're maybe displaying it back just for a select few people, or you're just want an export of it, or you're sending it out programmatically to some other system.
How about searchability? Does that, like,
yeah,
whether,
yeah. I think if you want it to come up in the regular search, it should be a content type. Especially if you want it to come up in the regular search with all the other content, then it needs to be a content type.
Is there any downside of using a content type for like, say, like some type of reference field or anything like that? I mean, I know, like, it'll clutter up the, you know, the content type screen, but is there any performance impact or anything, you know, by making everything a node type?
I mean, I think there is, especially if you, like, if it's something that's referenced from another content type, but never, like, always made in the same process. If I'm adding this, you know, parent node, I'm going to always add the child nodes together. I think if you use you know, a node for the child type stuff, then you have the overhead of the node load every time you're bringing those up. Whereas if it's something like realistically you're making it, and when you make the parent, you're also making the children, and when you delete the parent, you always want the child to be deleted too, then I think field collections is a good thing for that, because I don't think you have the overhead of the node load, and, you know, any module that might want to, you know, do an alter on the node load, or be notified when the node's being loaded. But also you don't have to put any custom code to say, okay, if I delete the parent, go out and make sure that the child is being deleted. I think that's a good use case, I think, for field collections.
I think the other thing that I think about when I'm making the decision on whether or not something's going to be a content type or something else is access control.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have any access control on the site, yet you want to add something that might need access control, and access control has, you know, there's overhead associated with it.
Yeah.
I look to say, well, does this really need to be nodes? Because if it doesn't need to be nodes, if it can be something else, then I will let it be something else, and then I won't have to worry so much about a separate access control module.
Right. I think the administrative portion of content, you know, if it's not going to be presented, to kind of agree with what Ted's saying, it makes sense to build it in something else, or as something else, rather.
Yeah, I think often if it's like somebody's saying, well, I need this other thing just to collect data, and it's really only for the admins to see, and they would have to install a content access only for this one thing, then I think it's a good case for not making it a node, because then you don't, you know, if everything else you're entering is public content and you have no access control, you're just, you know, controlling it by whether it's published or not, then it's really heavy-handed just to install like content access for that kind of situation.
But you must do content access on your entity form submissions though, right?
No, I mean, that's, and for entity form, there's just a global permission can view all submissions. There's not like granular level to say you can view this type of submission or that type of submission. There's an alter hook where you can get access to that. But by default, entity form, you just have one permission. So that in that case, it's not like a good use case if you're like, well, because I have feature requests where people are coming in and saying, you know, I want a certain group to be able to access the submissions for this type of form, but not others. You know, and I point them to the hook, but I say, you know, if you really need complex access control over this kind of stuff, you're probably just going to be better off making it a content type.
So I feel like this discussion, and even like when I'm building sites, I feel like I'm a lot more cognizant today than I was, say, a year or two ago about this thought process. About where maybe a couple of years ago I would just say, oh, well, everything's a content type, or almost everything's a content type. But I think today, and I don't know, I'm interested if you guys feel the same way. I'm much more methodical about saying, okay, does this need to be a content type or should it be something else? And I'm wondering, is that just something that I'm doing because I'm growing as a site builder, or is that something that I'm doing because there's more chatter about it in the Drupal community?
Well, is it something you're doing just because Entity API is now, you know, much more available and more mature?
Well, I mean, it's been available for a while. I mean, for me, I feel like...
But now we have tutorials and lots of people saying this is how you do things.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I feel like there's more discussion about using alternate entities today than there was even a year or two ago. And maybe that's in my head. That's kind of what I'm asking.
No, I'm kind of saying, I kind of think that too. And it's interesting to see how like best practices continually change and evolve. And I think Drupal 7's at the point where, you know, when Drupal 7 first came out back in like 1989, It was initially everybody was trying to figure out the big stuff, and as you know, in the 20 odd years, it's kind of people are concentrating more on the minutia, on the best practices of stuff that, you know, it might not even matter in maybe the majority of the sites. You know, I don't know. Maybe
wasn't
that's
it also, you know, Entity API makes your site screaming fast. So on a performance front, it makes sense to do a lot of things in custom entities.
And it's weird because as I teach my long form class, I tend to you know, the discussion about what an entity is and what bundles are and what fieldable entities are, that discussion keeps creeping up further forward or earlier and earlier in the class every time I teach it. And I'm wondering if this is something that when we're talking to beginners, you know, about learning Drupal site building, is this something that is kind of a foundational knowledge type of thing that students should know about? Is that, yeah, we've got content types, but content types aren't, you know, just because they're the most obvious one in Drupal core, that doesn't mean that's the be all and end all.
I mean, I think like a foundational thing for like day one, or I don't know about day one, but very, you know, soon after you start learning Drupal, the idea that you can add fields to multiple things and these are all entities, entity types, is that's a pretty basic knowledge. I think until you start to make pretty complex sites, you're fine with everything being a node. Not everything, but a lot of it being a node. Because a lot of times when you first start making sites, you're really not dealing with, okay, here's some sort of back-end stuff that only certain people have access to. It seems like most simple Drupal sites, you're creating content, and anything that's published, everybody has access to.
Well, for your curriculum, Ultimike, are you talking maybe teaching what entities are first and then going, this content type notion of a node is the UI way to create an entity?
I haven't made that leap yet. I mean, I definitely still, I cover Drupal core first, but then very early on, I will circle back and say, hey, you know, notice that when we look at user profiles, the interface is exactly the same as when we're looking at content types. And that's the same interface as that when we're looking at, you know, vocabularies, this managed fields and managed display. And that's what I kind of use as my launching off point for all of these things are entities. And the good news is that, you know, you can create your own entities, and contributor module authors have contributed their own entities. And this is what they have in common. This is what they do for us.
Yeah. So Mike, I'm interested, when you're teaching Drupal, is entity forms like hour one or hour two?
It's a prerequisite to the course.
Okay, good.
It's pretty much the filter that we use. I just show them a picture of you, and if they say, "Oh, Ted," I'm like, "All right, good to go."
Yeah, cool. Glad we're on the same page there.
Yes, absolutely.
It's a picture of Ted Bowman in the Tebow pose, right?
Because you didn't mention in that migrate the thing we're doing in LA. I mean, I'm just assuming half of that day is going to be entity form, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Migrating entity forms. Yes. It really is all about you, Ted.
Good.
No. I'll buy you lunch, though.
Yeah. So.
You're welcome. All right. So cool. Something to someone just shake their collar, Ted.
Yeah. She was napping. She got up.
No worries. All right. Well, cool. I thought that was a really cool story. It actually made me think about it. I reflected a little bit as I was reading that story, thinking about, yeah, it things are definitely changing, and I wasn't sure if it was me or everybody, but glad to see it's more than just me.
Well, reading Mikey's post really validated the IA structure that Jay Epstein came up with for Flutter Drupal Camp's website this year.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's a really interesting topic, Eric, about. And I've been actually thinking about having Jay on the podcast to talk about that.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that's Sunday after the camp.
Yeah. So for just to kind of let everyone know what we're talking about, the Florida Drupal Camp website was built this year, not with COD, not with the distribution, but by one of the guys down here in Florida, one of the folks down here in Florida, I should say, Jay Epstein, who is a Drupal professional, works for himself, has a bunch of clients. And he came up with this relativity data model for building Drupal sites using just, you know, some very commonly used modules, but heavily leaning on entity reference and content types and workflow. Really, really interesting. And Eric, you know better than I do the story behind it, but he basically, and Mike, I think you know some of it as well. He pitched a few people about, look, I want to build the Drupal Camp website using this data model because I'm pretty sure it's going to be easier to do it this way than working with COD again.
And it was so much easier than working with COD. I've been working with COD for event sites for 5 years now, 4 years. And it's really convoluted. It's hard to understand. It moves so fast and changes so quickly. It was really refreshing to have a new take on it with such simplicity. I mean, everything is a parent-child relationship. It works really well.
Yeah, it works. And we have, we're integrating in with Eventbrite. So we have Eventbrite kind of managing all the tickets. And then we're querying Eventbrite on every single cron run to pull down the latest attendees, to pull down their information to populate our attendees page. It's working pretty well. Eventbrite is just built very well. I don't have too many bad things to say again about it. It has a bunch of nice graphs. And of course, on the day of the camp, it offers like a lot of interesting tools that if we want to use where we can actually download an app to scan the QR codes of the tickets. I don't know if we're going to go that route. But one thing that I wanted to bring up about Florida Drupal Camp. So one of the Connerton who gives a really good presentation on COD, we purposefully stacked both Connerton's and Jay's sessions side by side in the rooms right next to each other. So my thought is people can vote by going into each one, and at the very end they can come out and maybe thumb wrestle. I thought that would be pretty cool.
See, I think it would be cooler if we put them in the same room at the same time and had a cage match.
Yeah, well,
that would be pretty cool.
I've been lobbying for a Drupal cage match track for years now. You know, panels versus context.
Yeah.
You know, anyway. So it looks like that's a, you know, yeah, so cool stuff. If you're going to be at the camp, I would definitely check out. I know a bunch of people. Jay's been around Florida for a while. A lot of people have seen his presentation, but I think it's at the point now where a lot more people might be paying attention to it after what we were able to do with our campsite. So, all right, moving on. So next story, I want to talk about D8 Accelerate. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. I just want to give an update. So far, over $140,000 has been raised for the Drupal 8 Accelerate Fund, and that money is exclusively used to fund developers to fix critical issues to get Drupal 8 out the door. We mentioned it a couple weeks ago because we wanted to see if we could contribute to the process a little bit. And I'll say we've had a lukewarm reception so far. I set a very low goal of, I thought low, $500 for us to raise. And we're not even at half that right now. We're at 150, which is kind of sad, which I had the sad trombone sound.
we should have had Ryan put it in the April Fool's one.
No kidding. We'd be done by now, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
So I'm leaving it open. Thanks to the few people that have contributed so far, I still would like to hit that goal. So if you want to help get Drupal 8 out the door faster, either, you know, pitch in and start contributing, or open your wallet and, you know, help fund, you know, one of many talented developers in solving some of these critical issues.
Are you setting up a sign or a table at this weekend's camp for taking,
I'm gonna be wearing a sandwich board.
Be cool if we had a kiosk or something.
Sandwich board and a tin cup. That's what I'm thinking.
Why not just make it suspenders in a barrel?
Or suspenders in a barrel.
Please don't take off the barrel.
You know, I bet you if we had someone in suspenders and a barrel and a tin cup, we would meet our $500 goal in a matter of minutes.
Yes.
Maybe if it was a keg instead of a barrel, but yeah.
Yeah, not it.
Exactly. Yeah, not it.
Sorry, Eric.
Sorry, I'm already touching my nose. I guess you guys can't see it.
You can't see it. Don't count.
All right, so last story. Did you guys see this? The d8upgrade.org site?
Yeah, it looks pretty slick.
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, so it's by provenix.com, and it's basically a community service where you submit your D6 or D7 site and basically do a screen – not even a screen dump, like an HTML dump of your modules page and provide that to the site. And they will supposedly get back to you and saying, you know, here's what you need to do to update to Drupal 8. You're ready to go now, or you need to wait for these 17 modules to be updated, or you have to do this and that and this. I'm not exactly sure how it's going to work yet. So I did it for Drupal Easy. And let me see if as of last night it had not updated yet. As of right now my site has still not been processed. So I submitted it 4 days ago on April 2nd. And as of right now it hasn't been submitted. So I don't have any feedback yet. But interesting, an interesting concept. I don't know how much of it is automated or how much of it – I suppose there's definitely a manual component. I can't tell you the node ID on mine or the site. It looks like I was the 12th site that entered. So we'll see. I'm actually looking forward to seeing the feedback on that. If anybody else wants to give it a shot, the link will be in the show notes. I suspect Drupal Easy site will take we'll probably have some dire predictions as far as how long it will take. Although I will say it's actually from a data and a functionality standpoint, it's almost already done because I'm greatly simplifying the site for Drupal 8, and I've got a little bit of knowledge about migrating data into Drupal 8. So,
So what if once they process it, it says you should have done it 2 weeks ago? It's too late.
Well, I guess I have to get a time machine then. That point. So
I was also thinking
you just hop into the Wayback Machine and resubmit the form, right?
Yeah. It's also kind of arbitrary, you know, because people might be switching modules, going from like web form to entity form or, you know, other module to other module or something like that, you know?
I'm curious to see like what format the results are in.
Ted, is entity form ready for Drupal 8 yet? And why not?
I am.
Seems like you already knew the answer.
I have started it. Maybe I'll announce here that I'm actually probably going to switch it to eForm because so I got the eForm project page on Drupal.org because entity form means something else in Drupal 8 on the programming side of it. So it's really kind of – I actually have an alert on IRC to if somebody says the word entity form, I get notified. But now it happens a lot more when in the core channel for things unrelated to entity form. So it'll be eForm for Drupal 8. But I've started on it. It's not too bad. I think because of what AnyForm does, it'll be just a whole lot easier in Drupal 8 than it was in Drupal 7. So it's probably going to be just a lot less code, which will be nice.
Is that going to be eForm with a lowercase e and uppercase f? Or like how are you? What's
a hyphen?
Oh my gosh. It's just eForm all lowercase for the URL. That's all right. I know so far.
Both eForm. Eform.
F and form. You know, was it Adam, the featured speaker with Globus, says he's going to upgrade a module during his 2-hour session. So you could just give that to him.
Yeah, sure.
I thought he was upgrading panels.
That is going to be one heck of a session.
Yes.
One.
It's going to be like Commander Data with his keyboard.
All right, well, Ted, I like the idea of capital E lowercase form.
What, are the project's URLs on Drupal.org? They're not case sensitive, are they?
No. Well, I don't think
it can be.
Well,
time to find out.
Yeah.
Let's see here.
No, actually, I don't think it matters.
No, but keep
my username is capital BL, but it's lowercase in the URL.
Yeah, no, keep the machine name the way it is. That's perfect. But you got to make the friendly name to be the same. The only thing you can really mess with is capital letters.
Yeah.
Otherwise, people will be angry.
Yeah.
Kind of like that guy that had entity form, but then as a machine name, but the friendly name was like entity space forms.
What about the what should I have the – so F capitalized, any of the other letters capitalized? Maybe the M? Just to be like on the edge.
Maybe the O could be a zero.
Oh, yeah.
Neat speed.
Maybe the M could be just be an RN with really bad kerning.
Only from a themer. Themer joke. Themer alert. All right. So cool. So let's move on real quick. Let's talk about webenabled.com. Once again, a Florida Drupal Camp sponsor. You know, I think they've been sponsoring the camp as long as they have been sponsoring this podcast. Definitely check them out at webenabled.com. Like I said, and I think I say every podcast, I use them, you know, almost daily for Git repository hosting and development site hosting. Love them. Great support. Anytime, you know, I have a question, you know, I submit a ticket and normally that thing gets answered in the matter of an hour or two. So definitely check them out at webenabled.com. All right. Picks of the week. What do you say, Mr. Baldwin? You want to go first?
Sure. So mine isn't of a module or any piece of software. It's actually something I'm looking forward to getting in the mail sometime before or after DrupalCon LA, but it is the TextBlade from WayTools. It's a new Bluetooth keyboard that, it's three separate pieces. It's about the same size as your MacBook Pro spacebar, but it fits in your pocket. It's got a battery that lasts, 30 days. It takes an hour to charge from nothing to full. If you're a touch typist like me and you want to touch type on your tablet or your phone, this is going to be the Bluetooth keyboard that ends all other Bluetooth keyboards. So I'm looking forward to getting it.
Sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah, man. Full QWERTY spacing, and about 8 keys, multi-touch. It's pretty nice.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the picture. So do the keys depress or is it just like,
yeah, full 2 millimeter depression on like a regular mechanical keyboard.
Yeah, so it looks like the three pieces are half of it is the left half of the keyboard, the other half is the right half of the keyboard, and then the space bar is the third piece.
Yep. Yeah, and the space bar is just as big as the others because it is the battery.
So does it all like fold apart? Like I'm trying to picture.
It's magnetic.
It's magnetic.
And it's adjusted at an angle, so it's ergonomic.
Have you had hands-on one yet? Hands-on?
Not yet.
No?
Not yet. But my understanding is that when you order it right now, they actually take, you know, 2.5-3 months to get it to you because they manufacture it when you order it. They test it in-house for 2 weeks, and if it breaks, they just build another one and change your shipping date.
How much does it cost?
It's $100. It's the best $100 I've ever spent.
Well, I don't know if you can say that. Yeah, that you hope.
I think it'll be the best. But it looks really promising. I mean, I'm one of those guys that, you know, SSHs into a server on my phone, you know, pulls down that 3 gig database to migrate it to another server. So it'll be nice to actually use Vim on my phone and not have to rely on a really crappy touchscreen keyboard.
Use Vim on your phone.
Another solution would be use a computer.
No.
Yeah, because that makes total sense. What I'm really looking forward to it for is not having to take my laptop to events. You know, if I could just bring my phone and that keyboard with me to a DrupalCon, I no longer have to worry about my bag when I'm at a bar.
Yeah, but can you balance that thing on your lap or something?
Sure. I could balance it on my wallet. It's really small.
I have a solution for that. Magnetic pants.
Yeah. Ooh. Yep. I think that looks pretty cool. I'm really interested. Like, I'm going to talk to you after you've gotten this because I'm really interested.
It does have a cool design. I'd be interested to. I'd want to touch it though before I bought it.
Yeah,
I want to play with it. I think.
Well, if you check out the website, they have a demo video. They have lots of videos, but you know, it just makes. If you're like me, use the keyboard for everything. It makes life easier on the phone.
It looks like the keyboard that Batman would use.
So you're saying I need a utility belt to hold it?
You could.
Or the keyboard that Batman would throw at someone to impale.
Yes.
An expensive battery.
All right, very good. Ted, really going out on a limb with a module here that no one's heard of. Tell us about it.
Hey, a lot of people have not heard of that. That's why I'm making the pick. Views content pane, so it's part of C-Tools. Okay, I have taught panels before where when I get to the point where I start showing views integration and turn on views content panes, people did not know it was there. So it's part of C-Tools. You probably already have it on your site. If you're using panels and you're integrating views into panels, you should not be using blocks or pages for those views. You should be using views content panes. It has special integration for contextual filters and views panels context. So. I know Mike's heard of it, but not everybody has.
No, I was wondering where you were when I saw it in the rundown. I was wondering where you were going to go with that.
Yeah,
but this is just so you've seen, you know, teaching beginner classes, and you know I'm there with you.
Yeah,
you know, it's not always obvious that you should be using it.
I don't think it's obvious at all. I mean, I don't think there's any way you would know. if you just installed panels and have views.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not, it's not very well documented at all that that really has any relationship to panels. Because you already have it in, like, there, but not enabled when you install panels.
So maybe you can answer the question, what's it doing in C tools and not in panels? Like, any idea what the thinking was behind that?
Well, I mean, when I looked at the code, I mean, it potentially looks like you could use it other places. For my module, what's it called? Views Beans uses it. But I think there was this whole concept of these content panes that could be used other places, besides, panels, but effectively are just only ever used in panels.
So if it's not used in panels, is it just a glorified block?
Well, it's not, they're not available. I think the only other place I've seen them, they're really effective is, like I said, my Views Beans module, but also, if you think about it, if you're not using panels and you're using some views programmatically, to like embed a view somewhere, which I did today in a site, you could potentially use the master display. But if you want to have multiple displays on one view that you're going to selectively use programmatically in different places, you could potentially use these because they're not going to pollute your URL by having a page, and they're not going to pollute the block page by having a block that you're not going to use. So I think that's one of the use cases to use them for when you're embedding views other places. That's my thought.
All right. Very good. And the best, Mike, according to the rundown. So go ahead, best Mike.
Thank you for acknowledging that.
Of course.
So I have two picks here. The first pick is last week's podcast, because especially Ryan's Drupal Oddity, which was the best ever.
It was really – it was stunningly good.
Yeah, and if you guys have – if our listeners have made it all the way through this podcast, they should quit right now and just go listen to that and then come back in.
Yeah, the rest of this podcast is going to be horrible.
My second pick is Backdrop's theme layer system, which is really awesome. And it's kind of like takes like a SMAX approach to its... It kind of enforces that, like a hard code's in there. There's, if you go into Backdrop, and I don't know if how much you guys have played with it, there's a separate layouts directory in there. And so within the layouts directories, you can have like a layout for one column, two column, three column, or whatever you want. So that's separately. And then there's a theme directory. So you can switch themes by keeping the same layouts and, you know, kind of vice versa, switch layouts and keep the same theme. And what's really cool is it kind of enforces your separation of concerns. And a lot of front-end developers are already doing this, but they're doing it through SAS partials or something else within their CSS or their templates or something like that. And I just think something like that would be really useful in Drupal core also.
So, Mike, it seems, you know, it sounds like, you know, for the longest time, as long as any of us have been building websites, it's always separation of content and presentation, separation mm-hmm. of content and presentation. It now seems like that there's like a third thing in there, you know, separation of content, layout, and styling.
Yeah, in a perfect world, there would be, you know, I mean, and obviously in real life, everything gets muddled together.
Right.
But, you know, ideally to push those all separate, it would be really beneficial.
So I know that like in the Drupal universe, there's definitely some base themes that have separate CSS files for layout versus styling.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like
a new bat.
Sorry, Eric?
I was going to say that's a new bat file naming.
Right, okay. It sounds like in Backdrop, they've kind of taken the next evolutionary step there and completely decoupled layouts from styling. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Right. It's pretty cool. You guys should check it out. It's actually like Backdrop as a whole is really slick if you take a look at it. So yeah.
All right. Very good. And then last bit of the week, my pick of the week, a simple little module that I, up until I found it, and I it's one of those modules I figured existed, but I never really used it because I always just kind of did the shortcut and hacked my database a little bit. But the module is called Modules Weights, or Modules Weight. I think the plural is wrong there, but whatever. And what it lets you do is, through the UI, adjust the weights of each of your modules. And you know, you may or may not know that modules can have weights. And the reason they have weights is because, you know, seven modules could implement the same hook. And how do you know which hook gets fired first? Well, that basically is dictated by the weight of the module. And every now and then there's a scenario where you have to make sure one hook runs after another hook, so you have to adjust the weight of a module. And, you know, it's relatively simple to do, to go into the database, into your system table, and you know, modify one of the weights. This module makes it relatively trivial to do through the UI.
So does this – I mean, have you ever run into that need when you're not already dealing with like a custom code that you're implementing your own hook that you need to have somewhere else?
That's usually the circumstance, is where I'm implementing a custom module with a hook that I need to make sure runs after some other normally contributed module's hook.
Yeah.
Because it'd be nice if that module was ported for the front end, because I'm always having to change weights on assets that I'm including or already included by core.
Yeah, and actually that's the other part of it. That's a good point, is, and I believe, if your module has a CSS file associated with it, that CSS file gets included, the order that your CSS gets included in relation to other ones is also based on the module's weight.
So, I mean, I would put a plug in, though, for there's a hook called hook module implements alter, where you can switch per hook, you know, where your module is going to be executed. Just seems like this is going to do it. You're basically putting a lot of function, you're changing a lot of functionality for wanting probably not all of it to change, right? If you were using this module to make sure your CSS gets thrown last, you're also would be switching all the hook orders. And if you wanted it for, you know, for the fact that you wanted a particular hook to run later, you're also changing every single other hook that you might implement.
So you're saying this is almost like a nuclear option where sometimes you just need a smart missile.
Yeah. I mean, I could see if the use case was you have two contrib modules and you don't do any custom coding. But if you're already doing custom coding.
Yeah. That's a good point.
It seems like this is a nuclear option.
Can you put the link to that function in the – thank you. All right. Very good. Okay. Let's get things wrapped up here. Upcoming events, of course, Florida Drupal Camp 2015 taking place this weekend in Orlando, Florida. You can find out more about it at fldrupal.camp, fldrupal.camp. DrupalCon Los Angeles coming up in mid-May, just about a month from now. Holy cow. Coming up fast. Don't forget about Ted and my migration training at DrupalCon Los Angeles, taking place the Monday of DrupalCon week. And Ted, your Learn Module Development Online self-paced class, how's that going?
It's going good. Getting good questions from people going through it.
It's going great.
Yep.
Okay. Thanks, Ted, for the scintillating report.
I got the mic.
The silence speaks volumes.
it is going well. Getting good feedback and good questions from people going through it. So I think it's helpful for people going through it.
Outstanding. Have you, based on those questions and comments, how many times have you updated the material so far?
I haven't actually. The questions,
really?
They've been very detailed stuff that I don't think is sort of needs to be covered in the main lessons. But you know, if people want to look at, you know, other people's questions and my responses, they can see it. But yeah, it's been very like fine tooth weird questions where it's good, but it's good for like a learning thing. But it's not necessarily. It's just you'd only need to know it in certain cases.
All right, very good. And Ted, while we're talking to you, where can people find you online?
Ted Bowe on Twitter or 6miletech.com.
All right, and Mr. Bladwin.
Bladwin on Drupal.org and pretty much everywhere Drupal on the internet, and Cloud9 on Twitter. That's NYNE.
All right, very good. And Mr. Herschel?
I'm M. Herschel on Drupal and Mike Herschel on Twitter because some other person took M. Herschel before I got on Twitter.
Hate that guy.
I know. His name's Matt. It doesn't even count.
Matt Herschel?
I guess so.
Doppelganger, perhaps. All right.
Let's get him on the podcast.
Next week. I'm UltiMike on Twitter and pretty much everywhere else. As always, you can find Drupal Easy at Drupal Easy on Twitter and everywhere else. Our missing co-hosts today, Andrew M. Riley and Liberator without the final vowel. Let's do some five questions, shall we? So we got two of you, so let's go quick, but we'll have Eric's answer first, followed by Mike's. So, Eric, what is your current development environment?
So I usually run X environments. Right now I'm mostly Unix with OS X. I use DAMP, which is the Drupal Acquia MySQL PHP LAMP stack, but I primarily only use that when I'm importing sites to work on, not creating from scratch. If I create a new site, it's usually through my core OS X AMP stack.
How about text editor?
I use atom.io for pretty much everything except for xhprof and xdebug, which then I jump into PHP Storm. And I use Vagrant for most of those new sites that I need to run xdebug on.
So after DrupalCon, will it be your phone and this new Bluetooth keyboard?
Yeah, if I can get Atom on my phone.
All right.
I might, you should get it working with like the
iPhone watch or the iWatch or whatever that's called.
The All iWatch right. is a discussion for a totally different time.
All right, Mr. Herschel.
Oh, I am much, much lamer than Eric. I use MAMP with Sublime Text too, and OS X, obviously.
MAMP and Sublime Text too. Okay, Eric, name one person in the Drupal community we should be keeping an eye on.
Well, I think Ashley Saborski from Palantir. She's their web designer. She's been working on a lot of cool stuff like prototyping in Twig. It's actually CYBORSKI.
If you could type that in the notes for me.
I will. but yeah, they've been doing a lot of mobile first front end focused designs in the browser as prototypes and just migrating those over to Drupal themes. Palantir is doing a lot of headless stuff too. So definitely someone to keep an eye out on.
All right. Very cool. And Mike?
I have a good one here. I have one of my coworkers, Matthew Tift, who's completely awesome. He's the co-maintainer of the Drupal 8 config management, which has recently closed and squashed all the criticals, so he's super excited about that. He also worked really hard to to have coding brought into schools in a school district up in Minnesota, where he met with the different schools and talked with them about how to teach high schoolers, middle schoolers, and even elementary school kids how to do development and how to think as a programmer, which is really awesome. And he also has a new podcast called The Hacking Culture, which is all about open source. They have all types of cool open source stuff that's not even necessarily software. So, but everything he touches is just like really, really awesome. So, shout out to the doctor, which is what we call him.
All right, and Eric, where would you like to see a future DrupalCon?
Outside of the stratosphere, either in orbit or on a satellite or on the moon or on another planet.
Okay, I'll just write down in space.
Well, I mean, we have space here on Earth, but whatever.
Okay, in outer space? Outer space.
There you go.
Okay. Get it right, Mike.
I'm sorry. All right, and Mike, hopefully an Earthbound destination?
Yeah, absolutely. So I went to DrupalCon Bogota, which was so much fun, and it was just a blast down there. It was the funnest DrupalCon I've ever been to. And they're having a DrupalCon summit in Rio, but I looked for the the plane tickets, and it's too expensive. It's like $1,000 round trip, where Bogota was only $400 round trip. So my choice is back in Latin America, but this time in Costa Rica. And I met a number of people from Costa Rica while I was in Bogota, and they all were the nicest people ever. And I'm looking forward to hooking up or meeting up with them again in Los Angeles. And but I've been to Costa Rica before. Costa Rica is beautiful, and I think if DrupalCon was in Costa Rica, I think probably half of America would fly down there. And they also have like a really, really popular Drupal camp that's coming up in June. And
their Drupal camps are nice.
Yeah. And yeah, so let's pick Costa Rica.
All right. Very good. And Eric, what is one aspect of Drupal you'd like to learn more about?
Symfony integration in Drupal 8 core, and how to work with that outside of it in Silex or some other composer-based tool.
All right. And Mike?
I am looking forward to watching and participating in Eric's session at Florida Drupal Camp, so I'm going to say Twig.
Very good. And Eric, if you could add one new feature to Drupal core with the snap of your fingers, what would it be?
Well, that's a hard one. Yep. But what I'd really like is some IDE integration that will, when I'm opening a module as a project, highlight code with, you know, issue queue links, or, you know, make available patches that have been submitted available to me in my IDE.
Wow. Okay. That sounds pretty cool. I'd like that too, I think.
It's like a dread editor for your IDE.
Yeah. That's cool.
And Mike?
I'd like a cup holder.
Cup holder. Okay. Everything needs more cup holders, right?
Yes.
She's got a desktop with a CD drive. Isn't that good enough?
The MacBook doesn't have one, which is why I'm asking one.
Yeah, there you go. All right, very good. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me today. And yeah, that goes for you too, Ted.
Thank you.
So,
thanks for the opportunity. It was great to be on another Drupal Easy podcast.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing you, Eric, and flying in Florida. And Mike, looking forward to seeing you. You were supposed to like call me a couple weekends ago or something, weren't you? I'm gonna call you out on the podcast. I just realized
I was just trying to actively ignore you. Sorry. Faster.
All right, no worries. I'll see you this weekend, maybe we'll run into one another.
Possibly.
All right, very good.
Also, Mike, aren't you gonna be in the front row to heckle?
I'll bring some banana peels and soft tomatoes.
Yep.
All right, very good. If you enjoyed this podcast, by all means, go listen to podcast 148, first of all, our April Fool's edition. If you like both of them, then you should probably be a subscriber. And you can do that on iTunes and Miro and any other podcast catcher that you can think of. If you do listen to podcasts or use a podcast directory that we're not on, by all means, let us know and we will rectify that as quickly as possible. As for future podcasts, we've got some stuff in the works, nothing to announce yet. But stay tuned. I'm sure in a couple of weeks we'll have a new podcast for you as well, once we all recover from Florida Drupal Camp. So, once again, this is Mike Anello thanking Eric Baldwin.
Thank you.
Okay, and Mike Herschel.
You're welcome.
And Ted, as always, a pleasure.
Pleasure to be here.
And we'll see everybody on the next Drupal Easy podcast. See ya!
See ya!
It's like you guys planned that.